Big Dog, all talk bad Ike, order Jordan Flegel. We apologize. We're sorry. Things were out of our control. Unforeseen circumstances across the board.
It was Easter.
It was delayed. And it was the holidays, exactly.
Friday, you know.
Yes, lots going on. Maybe you guys weren't even wanting to listen to the podcast. Jordan, I actually found out over the Easter weekend some troubling news. We've said we've wanted to be canceled. It's a goal of ours. As we talk on this podcast, give our hot takes both on and off the basketball court. I found out my own grandmother says she pretty much doesn't listen anymore because of some of the things that I've said.
What?
I apologize to my grandmother. I apologize to anyone else who's been offended by my terms. So maybe from now on, Jordan, I will not swear. I'm serious. Yeah. She said she still tunes in occasionally. But
did you have something in particular?
Well, I asked.
Was this a fat shaming? Was it what was it? What was
no,
it?
She said it was something I said about women, which I was like, I think that we usually don't talk about women. Kind of an irrelevant subject in our podcast.
God, irrelevant. You know, Matt, I'm with the grandma. I don't think I'm going to listen to this. I'm going to listen. I'll just skip through my parts. But yeah, you are offensive.
Yeah, I think so. At this point, that's what I'm getting the gist of. But yeah, I feel like I've always been pretty positive towards women when we talk about them on this podcast. But yeah, from now on, I'm going to have to pretend, or I'm going to have to keep in mind, rather, that my grandmother's listening. Maybe that's something that we all can take into account. Live your life like your grandmother is listening.
Yes, yes. Good rule of thumb there. Mm-hmm, maybe that'll be my sign off.
Doing your job for you.
I know for a fact though that I just feel better that if we do get canceled, that it'll mostly the heat will be on you, no matter, because I mean,
apparently,
we know that's how it's going to go down. So
his own grandmother doesn't believe in him.
Exactly. So I think I'm fine. I can say almost anything. Mm-hmm, it won't be what you're going to say. So that makes me feel good.
Well, let's see what kind of hot water we can get into this weekend, Jordan. As we talk about,
let's do it.
Our NBA playoff picks. Going through each of the first round series, as well as giving our championship picks, finals picks, and predictions. Again, obviously, game one has gone through for all 8 first round series, but we are giving you our picks from before those happened. We will be recapping and touching upon game ones, obviously, across the board. But yeah, we do want to address that we are still giving out our picks from before, no influences, no matter how badly they seem after the first game. So Jordan, let's kick it off. Let's go out east. Let's talk about the 1 versus 8 matchup, Cleveland Cavaliers versus Miami Heat. Obviously, shout out to my Miami Heat pick, getting from the 10 seed all the way through, knocking out the Hawks, and now matching up here with the Cleveland Cavaliers in the first round. And I think, you know, it's to talk about, you know, not even game one here, just my thoughts and opinions on how this series was going to go. I think that the Heat are there and they can compete with this Cavs team and at least make it, you know, a watchable series. I think they've got enough talent. They match up at good positions. I mean, Bam and Khalil Ware versus Mobley and Jared Allen, Big Dog of the Year, Jared Allen. If you haven't watched our Big Dog Ball Talk Awards special, go back and watch that as well. A bit of a spoiler there for you, but you should have already listened. You had extra time to listen to this one. But good matchups down low there. And then, you know, you've got, I would say, kind of, again, similar interesting styles up in the backcourt with Tyler Hero going against Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland. You know, neither none of those three are really known for the defensive skill set, but can, set fire to the mesh at any point, any given night. And then you got the wild card, the emergence of Davion Mitchell, my boy Andrew Wiggins. There's a lot of parallels and things to go into this matchup. That being said, the Cavs still should move out of this series, I think, pretty handedly. I think that, you know, my prediction coming into the series was 5 games. Could see potentially 6. I could see the Heat defending home court back-to-back, making this interesting. But I think that the Cavs really are just the better team, the deeper team, and just a little bit more of a better fit chemistry-wise than this kind of jumbled-up mishmash, if you will, Heat squad. So I roll with the Cavs in 5. That was my official prediction. And after game one, it's looking like it's holding up okay.
Yeah, for sure. I'm going back again. I have to reiterate, these are our picks from before the first games. And all of these, I've got them written down here, so I'm going to refer to that. I mean, I won't bury the lead because I agreed with most of what you said. I've got Cavs in 6. What did you say? Did you say Cavs in 6?
I 5. I said Cavs in 5, but I wouldn't be surprised 6.
Yeah. So I lean 6. I don't know. This is where it's sort of kind of changed a little bit in my mind after game one, where I could see it maybe closer to what you're saying. It's just a gentleman's sweep, because I thought maybe there was a chance that Miami could jump on Cleveland, who hasn't been playing for so long. Mm-hmm. Miami has, you know, we see this, you know, the whole rest versus rust thing, where Miami's sort of used to that postseason intensity. They've just played two games and can come in. And like, I think there's a chance that maybe, even though this was a 21 point win for the Cavs, that this is like potentially as competitive that Miami looks throughout this whole series. Like it could very well be a sweep as well. Like I'm not, I give the Cavs enough respect that they could do that. And Miami, mm-hmm. even though, you know, like we're talking about, they've got these proven playoff performers on their team, they're still 37 and 42 or whatever they were. Like they were went through a lot of the back end of the season looking straight up awful. Yeah. And it's true though, to point out the matchup advantages or ways that they can match up well. Like you said, Bam, I thought had a pretty good game. Could have shot the ball better. He took five mm-hmm. threes. He only made one, but overall I thought he was good. But you need more from Andrew Wiggins. And honestly, I think you need even more from Tyler Hero. You need Tyler Hero to be like a A1 type scorer out there and getting assists. You know, 21 points and two assists is not going to get it done. He's got to be really, really good. And I just don't know if that type of pressure as like the main guy who's going to make anything happen off the dribble, if that's a bit much for him at this point. He's never had to do that in the playoffs before. And, you know, if you're getting 18 points from Davion Mitchell off the bench, that's probably the best offensive game you're going to get from him all series. But you have to play him, even over guys like freaking Terry Rozier, who's going to get torched out there. Apparently, you know, the defender, Terry Rozier, when he was, you know, brought over.
Well, he's been benched. He's not even in the lineup.
No, not even playing. Not even playing. But that's what I mean. Like, you've got Davion Mitchell, who's a better option. But offensively, you can have some, you might be in for some rough Davion Mitchell shooting nights, you know, as we saw with the Raptors, who's great. I think Davion Mitchell's 100% deserves all the minutes he's getting, but there's not that sort of offensive consistency. And when you're looking around, it's like, yeah, Alec Burks, you might get one good game from him in this series. Duncan Robinson hasn't been great. I was surprised that Jaime Jaquez Jr. didn't get more play in this one as well after game one. Like, I think he could be, you know, theoretically a bit of a key to the series for the Heat if they're going to win a couple games. But then, you know, Andrew Wiggins as well. He plays 38 minutes, only scores 14 points. He's got to be that sort of second perimeter attacker next to Tyler Hero, whereas I think Andrew Wiggins is at this point is more comfortable in like a third guy role. So I think, like, genuinely, this whole Heat team, they haven't had enough time to adjust to the fact that Jimmy Butler, their like go-to scorer, you know, for the past however many years, just isn't there. So everyone is just playing up a role that they shouldn't be, and then that kind of throws everything out of whack. And I think it's just it's too much. But I'll stick with my Cavs in six prediction, just because, again, it's Eric Spoelstra. When they go down to South Beach, I think they can ride, you know, that crowd out to at least one of those wins. And then, you know, there's enough that can go right for the Heat that I could see that they could pick up a second game. But that's, I don't know, at this point it's maybe looking a bit like a stretch. The Cavs can just play so many different ways, and they're so good and they're so deep. And you know, I would say they got the best player in the series. You could maybe argue, because of how much of a down year Bam has been having, that they've got the two best players in the series. You could argue they have the three best players in the series if you really want to, with Garland, Mobley, and Mitchell. So, I just don't. There's no way in hell that this is a upset, as much as I joked about that on one of our last pods. But I could see Miami. I'll stick with it in six, couple games, but might be more like five.
Yeah, and I think, in all honesty, like, this was one of the worst games the Heat will play all series, and I think it was a little bit closer. Yep. Like we said, like, Davion Mitchell had a really awesome bang-on game. You know, he seems to really be coming alive in the postseason. Definitely that type of player that can be a bit of a playoff hero, has that potential, that attitude, and that play style. But I think for this one, like you said, the Heat are two games in, and it's they're two games into, you know, high-pressure, playing to the death, sudden death, season on the line matchups. I think, you know, the first half, it was a close game. I believe it was only a 7-point lead for the Cavs going into the halftime. And then it was after that, the third quarter, still a little competitive. And then the fourth quarter, they just ran away with it. I think that in this one, it really was just the legs of the Heat were a little bit down. And this isn't also, we're not just talking two games they've just played this week. There were already high stakes basketball, but those are two road games. And now they're playing a third road game. They're going to be playing a fourth road game. They're probably pretty fatigued at this point. And I think that, like we said, when they go back to Miami, we're going to see a totally new ball club when they hit the court. I think even in game two, they're going to be, a little bit more, adjusted to the situation. But I do think that at this point, there is probably some fatigue setting in, some tired legs out there. And also just, tired, mental loads right now. They've been going through a lot in a hostile environment. And, they're all human at some point. And it is a tough situation to go four straight games on the road, especially when the stakes are as high as they are. So I do think when they go back to South Beach, things will be a lot more competitive. But I think Cavs in five is the safe pick. But like I said, I wouldn't be shocked to see the Heat rattle off a couple upset wins, because like we said, I'm not 100% convinced with this Cavs team yet. I still think that they've got some flaws, some holes in their overall game plan. So we'll see. But at least I am happy to say that like the 1-8 seed matchup in the East is at least a little bit interesting. It has some intrigue. Yes. It has the potential to be good, because for so long, the last couple of years, the 1-8 seed has just been like, I don't even give a fuck what happens.
Yeah, 100%. And that's why, ultimately, I know I kept saying the Bulls were the most fun team, I thought, at the bottom of the East play-in to get through, just because their play styles.
Just glad the Hawks didn't get in.
Yes, that feels good. But realistically, competition-wise, Miami was the best option, because, they've got some vets on this team. They've got people who've been to the finals. We'll see. We'll see if that Heat culture, that Heat zombiness is still alive. That's another thing that's yet to be seen, is that we haven't... Mm-hmm. Aside from last year when they did sneak that, what was it, one game off the Celtics? Was it the Celtics or the Cavs? Oh, no, they played the Celtics, without Jimmy. I believe, right? That was without Jimmy.
No Jimmy.
So we'll see if they can do that type of thing again here, and sort of surprise the Cavs when they're playing at home. But I'm not convinced that they've still got that in the tank as well. Like I'm not convinced that they're not going to sort of fold under the pressure, because the Cavs are a really good team, and I don't think this isn't the team that's going to test the Cavs. I'm with you that I don't fully believe in the Cavs to go, necessarily even get to the finals, but I don't think this disjointed Miami team are the ones that are going to figure them out or anything like that. So it'll have to be just a gutsy win or performance, from the Heat as a group. I worry that maybe they ran out of all that sort of juice that they had in those first couple play-in games. And now it's like, oh, we got to face a fucking 60 plus win team here. They might not have it, but hoping just for the sake that I'm right, that they rattle off a couple wins.
Yeah, well, again, we'll keep a close eye on the series and seeing if the Heat can make things interesting, because it's always, we'd love an upset, we'd love to see it. We saw this Heat team with Jimmy Butler get all the way to the NBA Finals this way against a Bucks team nobody gave them any chance against. So we will see what happens in that series. But and then moving on down the line of the Eastern Conference playoff standings, let's talk about Orlando Magic, Boston Celtics.
This do we one, have to?
I think this one's actually, it's funny because again, it's actually less interesting than the 1-8 matchup. Coming into this one, Boston's going to win the series. It doesn't matter what there's absolutely no fucking way that Boston loses the series. I think they could rest Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown the entire series and still fucking win. That's how much better they are than the Magic. Even though in the regular season, the Magic actually won the season series against the Celtics, but that doesn't matter for fucking anything, because once you get to the postseason and the Celtics are actually trying, it's a totally different ball game. And this team, there's just levels to this game. And we've talked about the Magic throughout the season. They were lucky to get into the play-in, have that scare against the Hawks. If Trae Young doesn't get ejected, who knows how that matchup ends up playing out. But really, this one is like, the Magic are just a two-man team outside of Banchero and Franz Wagner, which, again, we've talked about at length that, like, the Celtics can't – if you have perimeter players, like, you will not – like, if that's where you're gauging 90% of your offense to come from, you're fucked. You have to have like a dominant inside presence. You have to have a spread out offense. And this team is like, again, it's the worst playoff offense in the you know, in the postseason tournament. One of the worst offenses in the actual, like in the entirety of the NBA. They finished the season ranked 29th in the league, 28th in the offensive rating, something like that. So one of the worst in points per game scored. So when you go up against arguably the best defense in the, you know, the NBA, you're pretty much screwed. That's, you know, not to, you know, now branch into the game one reaction, but that's exactly what we saw pan out. They actually had a lead at halftime, a 1-point lead after they had an awesome second quarter. And then the Celtics said, okay, let's stop fucking around. And they just mollywopped them, shit pumped them the rest of the second half. So I had Celtics in five. I thought I still think the Magic might be able to sneak one, on their home court. But, you know, after game one, it's looking more like a sweep. But I did, my pick was Celtics in five. I really didn't see this one being competitive at all. It's just, how the fuck are Corey Joseph and KCP going to do anything against Derek White and Drew Holiday? No. Like, it's just, it's not even comparable. It's just such a lopsided matchup. I mean, Porzingis versus Wendell Carter Jr., for God's sakes. Like, it's just a joke of a matchup, honestly. Like, you've got Franz Wagner and Paolo Banchero combining for 51 fucking shots. Like, it's just, you're not going to win when you are relying on two guys to do everything through the entire playoff run. It's over. Just call the series a wrap. Hopefully the next time we're talking about it, it's just saying that it's over.
Yes, yes. Like the Magic shot as a team, 37% from three. That might be like a high watermark. That might be the best they shoot from three all series.
Yes.
Because actually, like, KCP shot 2-for-4, even though that should be how he shoots all the time. He's just been god-awful this year. Paolo shot 4-for-7. That's great. You'll take that in. He has a 36-point double-double. Like, Paolo Banchero had himself a game. You know, Franz Wagner only shot 1-for-6, so maybe he'll shoot a little bit better than that. But, like, point being, like, their offense could look probably even worse than what they showed tonight, and they only got 86 on the board. You can make the argument all the way down, matchup for matchup, that the Celtics are better in every position, because even though you have Banchero and Wagner on the wings, like, I don't think anyone's taking them, either of them, over Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown at this point. Those guys are sort of, you know, younger and up and coming stars that may one day overtake them. But as of right now, like, that's an advantage that you'd have at most against most teams, but you just don't against the Celtics. They're too good.
Mm-hmm.
So there's literally nowhere for the Magic to go, because even if you're saying, okay, we're going to muck things up and you know, play just a really rough and tumble style of game and just drag it into the mud, the Celtics can do that to you too. Like, there's no way, like, it's not like you're playing a really good offensive team, which the Celtics are, and they're not that good defensively. That's what makes the Celtics so good. They're great on both sides of the ball. Like, you think you're going to be able to stop them from scoring. They're definitely going to be able. I mean, anyone, me and you could probably go out there, contest a few shots, and the Magic would miss. Like, that's how bad they are at putting the ball in the basket. And you're going up against, like you said, you can make the argument they are the most, effective playoff defense. I mean, until someone knocks them off, that's the title that the Celtics, I think, still have. Even like the fact that the Celtics only scored 103 in this one, like, Jason Tatum was 1-for-8 from three. He shot the ball terribly. I will say, anyone saying, oh, he had a bad game, he needed people to carry him, he was a team high plus 23. He still had 14 boards. I still thought he had a great game. Like, Jason Tatum, I think he's at the point now where, unless you catch him on a really, really bad night where he's missing shots and disengaged, he doesn't really have bad games anymore. Like, he's to the point where if his shot's not falling, he still does so many other things defensively, on the glass, you know, setting guys up, being a decoy. So, you know, there's that part of it too. Like, in the past, the Celtics of the past is like, oh, Jason Tatum took too many mid-range fadeaways and Jaylen Brown couldn't dribble, and now you can get them on a bad night. The Celtics can withstand almost any, like, variance thing that happens to them. Jason Tatum doesn't shoot well, that's fine. Derek White will shoot 7-for-12 from three and have 30 points. Drew Holiday, less than 10 points in this one. He's going to pop off at one point in this series. Jaylen Brown's going to have his game. Porzingis, they only needed 5 points from him tonight. Like, there's nothing. So I'm exactly the same as you. I had Celtics in five because I do think the Celtics are just, they might still have that tendency to kind of take their foot off the gas. Like, I could easily see them going up 3-1 and then losing that fourth game in Orlando and coming back and winning it at home. I think that's exactly what's going to happen. But Orlando is so bad that might be like what's should happen in most years, but Orlando just can't hit a shot anyway, even though they're trying really hard, and Boston just goes and sort of walks to a fourth straight win, and it's a sweep. Yeah. So either sweep or five, I'd be shocked if this goes six.
Yeah, if Orlando gets a win, it's going to be like a nail biter at home, and you know it's going to be the highlight of their year, and that's about it. Like I it's really not looking like it's going to go long. And again, for the enjoyment of us watching the playoffs, I'm hoping that it does not.
Yes.
Moving on to the 3-6 matchup, Detroit Pistons versus New York Knicks. Awesome game one. Great game one. The Detroit Pistons looked game. They didn't look shook. The young up-and-coming squad looking like they rightfully belong in this
until around the
mix.
Fourth quarter. Then they
started, shaking. Yeah, it got a little bit scary there, whatever it was, like 5 minutes without a field goal or something crazy. Yeah. Overall, you know, coming into the series, we both penciled this one as a potential upset to watch. Coming into the year, you know, we were not coming to the playoffs rather, you know, the Pistons have just looked so good and so improved, and the way they play the game and the personnel they have, they match up actually very well against this Knicks squad. You know, the Pistons have a superior depth, I think I would say, against the Knicks. And no matter what this kind of ends up shaking out to be, it will be a competitive series. I'm rolling with the Knicks in this one. I do think they'll take it, but I could see it going even as far as seven, but my official prediction is Knicks in six. I just think that, you know, they're going to be able to, you know, be a little bit more battle tested, a little bit more ready for the rigors of, you know, the playoff series. But again, there are guys on the Pistons like Tobias Harris and Malik Beasley and even Tim Hardaway Jr. that kind of have the experience. Dennis Schroeder a little bit here and there as well in his career. You know, they know what to expect. They know how to, you know, play in this kind of adversity, in this kind of situation, especially. And, you know, the Mecca playing in New York, it's not easy. You know, Spike Lee in your ear the entire game.
Yes.
Tracy Morgan's puking on the side of the court. it's a crazy scene. Get well soon,
Ben Stiller.
Tracy.
Yes.
Yeah, Ben Stiller's kicking around. He was there again, though. I don't know. Man, that was just weird. Maybe he was buzzed up. But anywho, this is it should be a really great series to watch. One of probably the most watchable series in, you know, the Eastern Conference playoffs. I would say out of the four that we have, it's definitely the most competitive, the most interesting. And I think the Pistons will be competitive. I think they can take a couple games off the Knicks. Definitely a beatable squad. But all in all, Knicks in six is still my pick. And I feel pretty confident about it coming into, you know, game two here.
Yeah, mine before the season started was Knicks in seven. After the first game, thinking back, I'm like, should have probably went Knicks in six. Like you're saying, like I don't think Detroit's quite ready to do this. And Jalen Brunson is just so good. I just don't, like, let alone everyone else that the Knicks have. I just literally think Jalen Brunson on his own is such a good controller of the game. Even when it's close at the end, that's who you're going to, I think, believe in the most, you know, between everybody on both these squads, to just either go get his own shot, get somebody else an open shot, OG, McHale, you know, or Towns, whatever it is. Like, I just think as a closer, he's just so much better than anything the Pistons have. And just like, it sucks. We talked about this a little bit towards the end of the season. Like, if Detroit still had Jaden Ivey, it would be such a more interesting sort of dynamic in this one. I just think they're that one perimeter attacker short, you know, ultimately, because they do have a lot of elements of a potential upset sort of playoff team. Like you said, Tobias Harris, he had a really good game. He was out there hitting shots.
He was on fire in the first quarter.
It was awesome. And I mean, we talk about whether guys will be able to replicate this. I don't know how many times you can count on 25 points from Tobias Harris, but we'll see. I didn't think he'd be good at all this year, and he's proven me wrong.
Even 19 from Tim Hardaway Jr. This season is pretty rare.
Yeah, 100%. So, like, your vets showed up. Harris, Hardaway, and Beasley off the bench showed up. Schroeder could have done a little bit more, but he, you know, I thought he was okay, like, it within his role. I think he'll have better games in this series, but your vets did what they needed to do. And you know, I think Jalen Duren a lot of times in this one didn't look great throughout game one. Like, there was times he looked a little bit lost. What was it? Yeah. He was a minus 20 in this one. I think it's a tough matchup for him.
Like, it's an 11 point box score in the end of the day, but it was close all the way through.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. So
the Pistons were up for a lot of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I think there's a world in which you know, maybe the Pistons try going a little bit smaller, like without Durant off the, on the floor. Like it just looked like Isaiah Stewart was more ready to contribute in this one in the minutes that he played. And so, you know, that's something to watch as well, because ultimately Durant's one of your better young players and you want him to develop into a guy who can be out there on the court in a series like this. And so, you know, we'll see if he can adjust a little bit. And Cade, like 21-12, it was good, but he's got to be even better. I mean, it's another scenario where he's by far and away the best player on this team. He's got to try and match what Jalen Brunson does. That's a tall order, but he's got to do a little bit more heavy lifting if they want to get some wins. But again, like I do think there are things that can happen for Detroit that'll make them sort of look better, especially when the series shifts back and they've got that home court advantage. That like that place is going to be rocking. And like I mentioned, like I think Dennis Schroeder is primed to have a really good game, or even like a really good quarter that just sort of where he's running his pick and rolls and is getting to the basket, maybe hits a few threes. Like he has that in him. So there's things. And again, I do expect Cade to have a much better offensive game or two or three in the series than he did. And like even Asar Thompson, like if he can get to a point where he's contributing more offensively, even just like cutting back door or, you know, Detroit getting some stops and getting out and running a little bit more. I think there are things that'll make Detroit look like they're better and will ultimately be more competitive in this series than this game suggested. But like ultimately, yeah, I don't really think the Knicks are at risk of losing this. I just, they've got too many weapons. And yeah, ultimately they're just a slightly more experienced team. But again, that's the other thing you're looking at for the Knicks side of things. Like I think Detroit's a little bit deeper too. So like, is there a point where New York is one of their guys tweaks something or isn't playing particularly well, and they're just sort of Tibbs is kind of searching for guys off the bench? Like how many times is Campaign? I mean, maybe Campaign is just immortal and is going to be good forever. But like, I don't know if he's necessarily going to be counted on for 14 points off the bench. And then you look
in 14 minutes.
It's crazy. He just
like, there's no fucking way.
He's like a cockroach. So, you know, that aside, you don't get much production from your bench at all. So, and ultimately, like, I think the scoring you got from OG and from Towns, like that's approaching kind of best case scenario. And one of those guys, unless one of those guys is really going to pop off and like lead the team in scoring that particular game, you know, obviously Mikal Bridges can have much better games. So maybe that sort of balances things out offensively, but I do think there's, you know, ways that the Pistons can look a lot better and the Knicks can look a lot worse, even though this one ended up being kind of lopsided. So, I'm sticking with all my original predictions, Detroit in seven, and I think it's, Knicks in seven. Nothing crazy here, but I'm excited to see basically when the series shifts. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if this goes back to Detroit 2-2, or 2-0, sorry, but I think when they get back in that building and they can really feed off that sort of youthful get out and run energy, I wouldn't be surprised if then it goes back to New York tied 2-2, and then we've got ourselves a series. So yeah, we'll see ultimately what Detroit can do, and if they can sort of get over those jitters. Clearly they had a little bit, especially late in that game one.
Well, we'd like to see the series go long, so expect to see some deep basketball in the Eastern Conference, at least in one series. But moving on to the next and last series here in the Eastern Conference, maybe the most disappointing Eastern Conference game one of all, because it was just boring start to finish. Big blowout win for the Indiana Pacers over the Milwaukee Bucks. Coming into this one, Jordan, you know, before game one kicked off, I did think the Pacers were probably going to win this one in six games. I almost wanted to go five, to be honest. But then, right before the playoffs start, you know, we get the Shams notification that Damian Lillard, the blood clots, an absolute medical miracle, have cleared, and he might be able to come back this series. I mean, what kind of Damian Lillard we'll see, what kind of condition he'll be in. I mean, it's all very hard to tell. Like, this is a very unheard of situation. Positive one for the Bucks, at least. But, you know, let's say, optimistically, he's back for game three, first game at home. He plays limited minutes for the Bucks here. Like, does he even really make that big of a difference in this series? In the obviously Damian Lillard, and he was talking a lot of shit off the bench there. Like, yes, he looks like he wants to be on the court. He's fiery, he's feisty, but yep, it's just a really tough, you know, sell for me right now, unless he's coming back and it's like prime playoff Dame, that this series will really be that competitive. Because the Pacers, like we said, are peaking at like the perfect time in the season. Tyrese Halliburton has been playing awesome coming into this. Pascal Siakam has been, you know, really solid, kind of changing the narrative around him and his performances in the postseason. And then again, they just are one of the deepest teams in the playoffs, the entirety of the playoffs. The Pacers have like 12 guys that they can get absolutely like reliable minutes from, which is, you know, not something that 90% of the other teams in the NBA, let alone the playoffs, can say. And that kind of showed in this one. Like, yeah, Giannis had a great game, 36-12 in game one. But then you got Kuzma putting up the Tony Snell, 0-5, 0-0-0. Chris Middleton, yes, who's fantastic, 36, 35, whatever, would have put up a way fucking better stat line than
at
that.
At least 2 points.
Yeah, it was just like nobody could get anything going offensively. You know, almost kind of felt like we were watching the Orlando Magic, but the Magic, yes, actually looked better than this. Like, thank God off the bench, you know, AJ Green and Gary Trent Jr. hit a couple threes. You know, it was just ugly start to finish. I feel bad for Giannis. He's got to get the fuck out of Milwaukee, man, because it's just getting worse and worse as every season goes on. After game one, I wouldn't be surprised to see this one go a little bit shorter. I did go Pacers in six as my final prediction coming into the series. But yeah, I'm intrigued to see the Damian Lillard effect long term in this series. But it's just hard to gauge what kind of Dame we're going to get. If he can come out and be gangbusters, maybe I could see this go to seven, and maybe the Bucks get a little feisty with it. Maybe things get a little crazy. But the Pacers just seem too deep, too skilled, too fast, too cultured. It's just a very viable threat in the East versus a team that is just, you know, past the expiration date at this point.
Yeah, yeah. And we've talked about that for months now with the Bucks, that they just don't look like they have it, even when they had Dame, like a fully healthy Dame, before we even knew about this blood clot issue. It's funny looking,
even Jamaican.
It's funny looking at my written down pre-game, pre-playoff series starting predictions, because I don't even remember if I knew the Dame news that, you know, when I wrote these, that he could possibly come back for game two or three. I'm going to assume that I did know it, because I have Pacers in seven, and that's crazy to me that I would have picked in them in, you know, a series to go that long if I thought Dame was out for potentially all of it. But you know, let's go based on that. So that was my pick. It's true. Like, what, how Dame is going to look, I have no idea. I don't know what shape he's kept himself in, or if he's been able to keep himself in shape at all. If he's dealing with this, like, if he's been sidelined,
watching videos again.
Yeah, like if he hasn't been running, That's a crazy, you know, environment to be put back in immediately off of such a long absence. Luckily, he does a lot of his work offensively, at least, you know, as a shooter. Like, he can, even just his presence out there will help the Bucks offensively. Defensively is another story. Like, Dame at the best of times isn't a good defender. So, you know, that's something they're going to have to continually cover up for if he's out there on the court. But certainly offensively, he's going to help them no matter what, you know, what condition he's in. In any case, I just don't see the Bucks having any chance to win this. Like, even if it goes seven, I think it'll be like you know, the Pacers kind of shit the bed in a couple of these games that they probably should have won. And then it'll be like a couple more
blowout. 3-for-13 nights from Tyrese Halliburton. Like, again, the Pacers, they had such it really wasn't that good of an offensive performance. Like, they are lucky that the Bucks played even fucking worse, like by far worse. Like, there was multiple bad shooting nights in this one.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. The Pacers, I mean, because we've seen how crazy their offense can look when Tyrese is not only passing, like, he had 12 assists in this one, that was good, but like scoring himself 25 plus points and reining in the threes, like, he didn't make a single one. But even all that said, kind of like the Jason Tatum situation, he was a plus 27, second highest on the team. Like, he was still doing exactly what he needed to do as sort of the head of the snake. Pascal had a great game, like you said. And I'll mention again, this Pacers starting lineup is fucking legit. Halliburton, Nembhard, Nesmith, Siakam, and Turner, everything fits like a freaking puzzle piece. Not only that, then you have Ben Mathurin, who they didn't have last year to rely on as that sort of, you know, spark plug off the bench, that just instant offense type scorer to come in as the first sub. that just makes a hell of a lot of sense, those top six. And then, like you were saying too, they're deep below that. They've got TJ McConnell, they've got Obi Toppin, they've got Jairus Walker, all these guys that they can rely on. And so, yeah, like the Pacers, I think they're like approaching legit status. Like I still don't think they're at the Boston 100%. Or Cavs level, but like, I think they're in that conversation with New York. I might even like pick them over New York as a potential like upset to one of those top two teams. You know, if they keep looking as good as they have,
we'll play the Cavaliers. And I mean, that's a really interesting, you know, series to look at. I mean, we're getting very ahead of ourselves right now, but you know, as both of us have picked the Pacers, you know, to win the series and the Cavs both to win their series there. You know, it's fair to make that assumption. Like that's going to be a bloodbath. That's going to be a close one.
Yeah, 100%. Like I really do think that the Pacers are that good at this point, and they've got so many different options. And again, like the thing I like about that starting lineup is they're not that weak defensively. Like everyone's like, oh, the Pacers, they can't really defend. Like Pascal and Miles Turner, that is a really good offensive or defensive front court. Nembhard can lock people down in the backcourt. Nesmith is a really good perimeter defender. Like they've got good defenders. And when they've looked sort of worse through most of this year is when a couple of those guys were missing time, sort of at inopportune moments when they look kind of worse, you know, defensively. And obviously it's never really going to be their strength. Offense is going to be what carries them, but they can hold up. And so, yeah, I'm not sure what compelled me to say Pacers in seven. Maybe I just wanted to give Giannis that respect. But again, like we saw in this one, Giannis can have heroic games, like really, really awesome stat lines and still lose. And so, yeah, Dame is the ultimate X factor. He actually had really good showings against the Pacers when these two teams met last year in the playoffs. Obviously, you know, the Pacers won somewhat handily in the end, but if
it went to six, though, at least
I think it did. Yeah, I think it was six. But the Pacers should have wrapped that up earlier. Like
that's ridiculous. That's probably why you had to go into seven. Was just
that's the thing too? It's like, am I looking sort of at the old Pacers? And who knows? They could turn into that again. Last year, like when they went out on the road in Milwaukee, they looked like a young, kind of startled team. Mm-hmm. If they look like that again, I could see it going longer. But
wasn't last year? Was the game one? Siakam had like 40 points, 30 points or something, and then didn't score over like 15 the rest of the series. Like,
this is a great matchup.
Yeah, this is still a series that I think the Pacers have it. They look great, but they still don't have 100% of our trust.
Exactly.
So it's important, not to get too overreaction on this one. But yeah, it is an interesting series. I think that there's going to be some weird games even going forward. Wouldn't shock me if the Bucks get a blowout win at some point as well when they're in Milwaukee. Like Kyle Kuzma fucking catches fire for like four threes or something finally. Maybe not Kuzma because he's fucking dog shit, but it'll happen. They won't be a sweep by any means. I still think six and even seven, especially if Dame comes back, isn't a ludicrous prediction to make. So we'll see if the Bucks can bounce back and, you know, actually make this a series, make it competitive. So Jordan, we've talked about our Eastern Conference playoff preview, our picks for each series. Do you want to give your pick to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals? And then we'll do our West, and then we'll give our matchups for the finals, and then our final predictions.
Beautiful. I think this has got to be most people. Like, I'm interested to hear what you have to say, because like you mentioned, that potential Pacers-Cavs series that we both have here in the second round could get interesting, but it's Cavs-Celtics, and I'd be surprised if you're not the same way.
Yeah, I'm also locked in Cavs and Celtics, and I think it'll be a hell of a series. I know that when we have a close series like that, we always want to say seven games, and then, you know, it ends up not shaking out that way. But I'm strongly in the camp that it's going to be a seven game series, Cavs and Celtics. It's going to be a hell of a series, hell of a barn burner. Those second round matchups, like we said, just think the Cavs are a little bit better than the Pacers at everything.
Yeah,
in my opinion, like even like you know, off the bench. They just have like a lot, like they have some guys who I feel can actually be game changers. Whereas the Pacers, it's like, you know, you might get a couple contributions here and there, but you, no one off the bench really scares you. So I got like the Cavs there. Celtics, again, the Knicks have tried to create a team that will beat the Celtics, but they're still not better than the Celtics.
No,
so in my opinion, I'm not like, if you're struggling to beat the Pistons at home, there's no way you're beating the Celtics in a seven game series. So Celtics Cavs, Eastern Conference Finals. That was an easy decision for me.
Yeah, I think ultimately, yeah, that ultimately it was an easy decision. But like you just said, I think those are two good second round matchups, all things considered. Yeah. Knicks Celtics, like, I think it might take 6 or 7 games for the Celtics to beat the Knicks. I still think ultimately they will.
Yep.
Even if it goes to that 7th game, I really don't give the Knicks much of a chance at all to go into the Garden and win there. But I could see it getting there pretty easily. And same with that Cavs-Pacers series. I could see that going 7. So I'm banking on some really good second round series. But I no matter how long they are ultimately, I would be pretty shocked if either the Cavs or the Celtics get upset early, unless there's some kind of crazy injury. Yeah, I think those two are destined to meet, and I agree. I think that one's going 7 as well.
Well, Jordan, when it goes to 7, who you got winning it? Because you know it's a tough one. Like the Cavs,
it is tough.
They've got all the regular season glory, but you know the defending champion Celtics. We've seen them reach the NBA Finals twice in the past 4 years. Like they are a bona fide title contender. You know, who do you have punching their ticket to the Eastern Conference or from the Eastern Conference Finals all the way to the NBA Finals?
Well, with these things going 7, you might argue, again, I think this is a 7-game series because I think, like, as good as the Celtics are, like, the Cavs, they are not scared of them. In the matchups that when they play, like, the Cavs, I think, still match up pretty well in sort of in different ways. They push that front court advantage that they have, you know, the two towers with Allen and Mobley. But if you know, Allen gets played off the floor, they can still play with Mobley as the lone big. They've got good shooters off the bench, like, I think this is going to be a really, really fun series, one that I'm really looking forward to as a conference final. I just think that when it goes 7, the Cavs assholes, their sphincters are going to tighten up a little bit. You know, this 7th game at home, a chance to get back to the finals, first time since LeBron, and you have the defending champs coming in. You know, I think we've seen the Celtics in that scenario before in games where they're sort of supposed to win at home, like that Heat one. From a few years ago when the Heat got to the finals, when the Celtics could have become the first team ever to come back from 3-0, they lose that game 7 at home. I think a lot of it, you know, Jason Tatum did go down with an injury in that one, you know, granted. But a lot of it is like, the more you want something and when it's in front of your home fans and you have this expectations like, oh, the confetti's going to fall, that's when things start to get tight, especially for a team that's never really been there fully. Like, remember, they fucking struggled to get out of the first round last year. So I think it's going to be go 7. Celtics are going to go into to Cleveland and just break some hearts.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I've also got the Celtics taking it in 7, going to the NBA Finals back-to-back years. They're just, again, it's one of those teams when they're so good, the regular season, you don't even have to worry about them because you know they're still going to rattle off 55-plus wins. They're going to be dominant. When the playoffs start, they just click into high gear, and it's just, you know, they're like, oh, my God, yeah, these are still the defending champs. This is still like a insanely talented squad, and yeah, I just think when it is a high stakes matchup like that, like the Cavs are good but the Celtics are great, I just, no matter throughout the whole series, the season rather, you know, we've said how good the Cavs are, that they are one of the best teams in the NBA, they are a title contender legitimately, but they aren't the title contender. They aren't the best team in the league. They aren't a team that, you know, we've seen, you know, prove themselves in the playoffs. It's very rare that you have a team that hasn't gone through all the battles and the trials of the postseason. Like, they've had postseason matchups and they've gone and, you know, tried, but, you know, they've lost to the Knicks. They've lost the, you know, last year, they weren't able to, you know, get past the
Celtics.
Not the Celtics. Yeah, again. Yeah. And I mean, yeah, like you said, went to 7 against the fucking the dog shit.
Should have lost to the Magic.
Yeah, it's just not a squad that I have seen them prove to me yet that they're ready. And, you know, this is every championship team takes their lickings. Like you were talking about there, like the Celtics lost in the playoffs several times. They kept having to come back and learn from all those mistakes before they actually got to the NBA Finals. Still lost when they got to the NBA Finals and then came back and won it. So to me, I just think the Cavs are still, you know, a couple years away, a couple, you know, it factor moments and lessons learned from getting there. And I think the Celtics might just have to teach them that lesson the hard way. And they'll be punching their ticket to the NBA Finals this year. And taking on our champions of the Western Conference. Let's talk about the West, Jordan. Kick it off with the 1-8 seed. Oh my God.
Do we have to?
Another one, yeah. Do we have to?
Holy shit.
So this is my worst prediction so far, if we're factoring in game
upset?
One. Not an upset, but I did have the Thunder in 6. And I still think the Grizzlies can get a game. I said it coming into the play-in. I think the Grizzlies are super underrated. They are on, like, they should be a way better team than they are. But That's what I'm thinking with my brain. I'm looking at the stats. I'm looking at the players. I'm looking at the history. I'm looking at everything that should be happening, but they just don't give a single fuck. There's no fight. There's no spirit. There's no grit in the grindhouse anymore.
No, it's just the grindhouse.
It's been, yeah, it's been ground out. It's all dust now. It's just not an impressive team to me. They just didn't have any fight. The Thunder, kind of like we were saying with the Celtics, like they just turned it on. They are a legitimate title contender, obviously. I would be surprised to hear that notion be put on them. They are so deep, so talented, so good, so skilled. And really this one, like they punched the Grizzlies in the mouth and the Grizzlies just said, fuck it, we're just going to stay down and not even try to fight back. You can just stomp our asses out for the rest of the 48 minutes. It was over after the first quarter. It was a 12-point deficit, but in the first quarter in the playoffs, like you're on the road in a really raucous building. Like it just never got better. It got worse and worse as the game went on. And by the end of the third quarter, it was dead to rights, for a long while beforehand. So,
yep.
I do think there's a way that the Grizzlies could still win a game against the Thunder, but they really have to do some soul searching and determine if they care, because if they come out with this lackadaisical attitude again and this like relaxed figure, they'll get swept. And yep. That's just the reality of it. They have the potential to be great, but I just don't think that they are, a well-oiled machine. Don't think they have any on-court or off-court chemistry at this point. I just think it's a very unfun team at this point of the season. I think they're kind of ready to just go hit Cancun. So I'm out on the Grizzlies now. They hurt me enough at this point. But my prediction was 6. But yeah, after game one, this is that's a tough pill to swallow, watching a 50-point blowout and then thinking that the other team's going to somehow get 2 wins off them.
Yes. Well, this is where I might look the best so far. I predicted the sweep. This is my one first-round sweep that I feel like I can see coming. Memphis, it's just I think they're at the point that you're talking about. I think they're ready for the season to be over, and I don't think that, more importantly, I don't think that they, again, I'm harping on something or seeing something that isn't there. I just don't think that these guys are really ready to go to war behind Ja Morant. Like, I think Ja Morant gets out there, does what he does well. Like he only had 17 points here after game one. Like, that's not great, but he at least was trying to get stuff going. I just don't think that the rest of this team at this point feels like, oh yeah, we're going to fall in line behind Ja. We're going to go into battle with him. And we're going to play hard just for the sake of this team. Like, cause you also don't have your head coach that's been there through this whole period.
Yeah.
When you were getting better as well, like they're leaderless in a couple ways here. And that's why I think they're just falling apart time and time again. And they weren't able to come together and put any sort of, fight worth anything in this game. The worst game one, margin of victory ever, the largest ever. I just see more of the same. And even when they go back to Memphis, like, I don't think their fans are going to be the same level of like rabid and crazy. Like, I think everyone sees the writing on the wall. And I just, even if they were able to rally, even if they were able to say, look, let's do this one more time, fellas, before we hit Cancun, let's get one win. The Thunder are just so good and stifling defensively. Like, the amount of turnovers that they force, that they just go get out and run. Like, it's just, there's, it's another situation where there's just nowhere for Memphis to go in any one of their matchups. They're already, the Grizzlies are challenged in the half court to create offense. You're not going to be doing it against the number one by a mile off defense in the NBA, who can play like we just talked about the Cavs or even the Celtics, like these other teams who can play big. You want to go big. You want to put Zach Edey out there. We've got Hartenstein and Chet. Like, Edey's not getting any sort of advantage. You're going to try and go small. We can go as small as anyone in the league and be better at than you at it. There's no advantages for the Grizzlies to press. So I'm sticking with sweep. It looks pretty good after game one.
Yeah, and just like that Magic Celtics series, hopefully the next time we're talking about this is just saying that it's fucking over.
Yeah, let's get it over with.
Yeah, moving on from the Thunder, mollywhopping and the Grizzlies. Let's talk about the Rockets versus the Warriors. This is a really juicy one. This is an interesting one. We highlighted the Rockets as kind of that team that everybody wants to play, that was at the bottom of the kind of the play-in or the Western Conference bracket, really. The young and unproven squad, a lot of those guys making their playoff debuts, and even the guys who are their vets coming into that aren't, anyone that's going to really scare you too much. So a very intriguing matchup. You've got Steph Curry and Draymond Green, a duo that's, they've had some playoff success, I believe, in the past. and Jimmy Butler as well, you know, a proven playoff performer. Very interesting matchup stylistically. Yes. You know, both teams very good on the defensive side of the ball this season, but, you know, offensively has been very hot and cold. And that kind of continued into game one. Prior to game one, I think I went against kind of the grind here, the norm. I had the Rockets in six. I kind of said, even in our play-in preview, I still don't buy into this Warriors team. I'm still a little skeptical on them. I just don't see them having the run that a lot of other people envision. The Rockets, I kind of wasn't surprised to see them drop game one, even at home. You know, this is, like I said, a young and unexperienced team, so it's not I don't think they need to hit the panic button by any means. I mean, they held them to 95 points. Like, it's not like yep. they only scored yep. 85 points. But, you know, they did some things well. So I think that there is a lot to improve on there, you know, from game one. But I expected the series to be a drag-it-out, bang-on match. So I'm excited to see how this one figures to play out. It's going to be, you know, for all the basketball sickos out there that love defense, love some grit-and-grind yes. matchups. But I still feel pretty good. I think the Rockets can pull this one out against the Warriors, even though I'm sure Adam Silver and the rest of the casual fan base would love to see the Warriors continue on.
Yeah, well, surprise, surprise, Matt. I have Rockets in six as well, or that was my pre-series prediction. I'm going to stick with it. It was a little bit, eye-opening, I guess you'll say, like to see Golden State go in there and see Jimmy and Steph have such good games. Mm-hmm. But again, I mean, I think for the most part, if you're Houston, you got to just accept that those guys are going to go off and try and limit everyone else, which they kind of did. I mean, you look around, like Pajemski had 14. He was okay, but otherwise
they got double digits.
Yeah, and basically nothing from their bench. And this, what we knew this was going to be the case for the Warriors. Like, offensively, they just have no one. That's why they desperately needed Steph to bring in Jimmy Butler at all, even to make them sort of passable mm-hmm. to have two guys that can go. But like, 42 minutes for Jimmy, 40 for Steph. Like, how sustainable is that? I know it's the playoffs and you're going to do heavy minute loads for all your guys, basically. But like, I could see if you're going up against these young guys again and again and again, Tari Eason and fucking Amen Thompson, and you have to go mm-hmm. in and take a screen from Steven Adams, like all these guys, like, they're going to get tired. Like, I'm sure even after game one, they're tired. Like, these old guys, and already Steph had the thing with the thumb. Jimmy was kind of, I don't know if it was his groin or his knee or whatever was bothering him in that last game of the regular season. Like, the Warriors, they're on thin ice here. And I know that's weird to say after, you know, the fact that they're up 1-0, but like, I can just see it. This is how I see the series kind of playing out, because offensively, like, the Rockets were awful, even worse than normal. Like, 39% from the field, 21% from three, and 55% from the free throw line. They left 9 points at the foul line. Even if you just shoot a little better than that, just on the free throws, and you're still terrible from three and from the field, like, you're sort of in this game. And like I said about Steph and Jimmy, like, those guys played well, like, against the defenders that they're gonna have to go up against night after night after night. Like, that's approaching best case scenario. Fred VanVleet, I mean, I'm not that surprised that he shot 4-for-19 and was bad from three. Like, that's just what you get. But he's going to have better games. You're going to hopefully Jalen Green can have a better game. My God, he was awful in game one. They really need him to be better.
Yeah, but him and Fred, man, unfortunately, the fingers are pointed at them. Again, Fred, you were bad, but like 2-for-13 from three, that is what really worries me, because he should be like, you got
to
at least,
like you said, he needs to have a
couple threes.
He needs to have a kid if he wants to turn this around. But yeah, 100%. But like, if you get even one of those guys popping a little bit more, like the mm-hmm. Rockets could have won this game. It also kind of sucks that the Rockets didn't win this game, because that Şengün dunk on Draymond, the second basket of the game, was absolutely insane. That tore the roof mm-hmm. off. And that's going to kind of be lost to history a little bit now.
And he was awesome.
But he was great. Yes, he was great. But yeah, I just think that the Rockets have so much better to get. They have so much better to sort of play offensively. And I think the shooting variance is going to tilt. And then Golden State is in for some much uglier showings from Steph and Jimmy. And if those guys mm-hmm. aren't on, if you don't have both of them going, there's just, I don't believe in anyone else on this team to have a good game against such a tough defense that the Rockets sort of present every night. So I think it's just going to get harder. Ultimately, the name of the game for this series, I think, is going to get harder for the Warriors to get wins. And as the Rockets settle in, they have guys who sort of adjust a little bit and start playing better offensively. It's going to get easier for them. So yeah, I still like the Rockets in six pick. Golden State, you know, Jimmy and Steph have a history of sort of proving people wrong and playing better than you think. And I mm-hmm. give them that respect. So I would not be shocked if Golden State does win this series. But I just think Houston, it's one of those situations. I've heard people make this comp back. I think it was 14 or 15, whenever it was, that old Spurs team played the mm-hmm. Thunder. And the Spurs had sort of, everyone sort of expected that their savviness was going to carry. But then you just have, you know, prime Russ and all these freaking Thabo Sefolosha and Serge Ibaka just physically overwhelming this older team that was better and more experienced. And at the end of it, they were just like, they had to tip their caps to them. They're like, these guys just came out and just out athletic to us. And I can see a similar thing happening here. So just a rough game for the Rockets. I think they're going to be better. Either way, this is a juicy, juicy series. I think people's favorites in the first round just because it's so different and it's such a rock fight. But 95-85, that's some old school box score stuff there.
Well, we had a lot of low scoring for game ones, actually, which was kind of an interesting, refreshing taste in a lot of people's mouths. I think the last thing I want to say on this series as a whole, you know, I agree with everything you said. Like, for the Rockets, their pathway to victory in the series is so much easier than the Warriors, yes. in my opinion.
Yeah,
like the Warriors are just relying on that the Rockets are going to play badly and they're not going to be ready for the trials of the postseason basketball. Like it is just that is what they're relying on. Whereas like even just looking at how they played game one and then they're playing matchup against the Grizzlies, both close games and both of them, they're relying on Steph Curry and Jimmy Butler to produce 70% of their buckets. So at this point, you could run a box in one. You can just let Steph Curry.
Triangle in two, baby.
Like, there's no one else outside of Steph Curry that's really going to scare you outside the perimeter. Like, Buddy Hield is fucking broken. Like, he's shit. Like, Quentin Post might be their second best fucking shooter on the team. Like, I'm not even saying that as a joke. Like, it might actually be the case.
Depending on, like, Pajemski's night, yeah.
Yeah, I seriously would just consider letting Steph feast and then just taking Jimmy Butler out of the equation, double teaming, whatever you got to do, and, just making his life hell. And going from there, because I think Steph is a little bit harder based on the personnel, the double team, and really take out of it. I think that he's a lot more equipped to deal with that. You double team Jimmy, you push him, make him play from the perimeter. You take away his lanes to the inside. I think you could really take his offensive production and diminish it majorly. Whereas Steph, he can average 36 points per game in the series, but I guarantee if you hold Jimmy the teens, you will win the series. So. Intriguing to see what Ime decides to do moving forward in this series. Moving on though, Jordan, let's talk about the 3-6 matchup. This is the big one. This is a crazy game one. I mean, I still think this is going to be an awesome series. We got the Los Angeles Lakers, Minnesota Timberwolves, Luka Doncic versus Anthony Edwards. This is a hell of a matchup. I am rocking with my boys. Over in Minnesota, Jordan, I'm still rocking.
I knew you would.
I mean, they were my pick to go and win the title this year. So I had to at least get them.
Mine was the Mavs and the Sixers, in case anyone cares.
Tough one.
Turn off the podcast now.
Yeah, what did I have? Timberwolves over Celtics maybe.
Yeah,
probably Celtics. It was a safe bet. Timberwolves still. They were my pick. We'll get to our finals picks in a little bit here, but. They're my pick to beat the Lakers in this one, but I'm not like super confident about it. It'll be seven games. This series is going long. There's no way it's not. We'll talk about game one here in a second, but I just think that there's so many levels to this matchup, so much versatility in both teams. It's going to be a lot of gamesmanship. Like I'm really, intrigued to see how it's all end up going to, shaking out here for the Timberwolves. I'm looking, Anthony Edwards, that he's in a position. There's not really anybody on the Lakers that can match him defensively. Nope. He has to just feast. He has to prove that he is the superstar that people believe he can be. He's got to go out there and ball. On the other side of that one too, Rudy Gobert, this is a big series for him. He has the advantage and the tool set and the physicality that he should be able to kind of be a huge reason, a huge cog to, you know, win this series. You know, the Lakers are weak interior, you know, both finishing there and, you know, just obviously the players they have there, like Dorian Finney-Smith is playing the five a lot of the time.
Yep,
since Jackson Smith is trash.
Jackson Hayes.
I think I was gonna go Jackson Smith and Jigba over the Seahawks, but then I just cut out the Hayes. But yeah, it's not a front court that really scares too many people at this point in the season.
No. So
I do think the Timberwolves have the right personnel here, and then you've got Jaden McDaniels, who is maybe the best one of the best defenders in the NBA at the wing position, and you know he showed that a little bit there in game one. But again, you got LeBron James, arguably the best player of all time, still putting up all NBA seasons at age 40, and Luka Doncic, who, like we've said many times, may be the best player in the world right now, depending on you know how you look at it. It could go either way, Jordan. I'm still taking the Timberwolves. I just think they have a little bit more depth. I think they've got the matchup advantages over the Lakers in this one. I think they have what it's it takes. But at the same time, that's a brain pick. My gut still says it's LeBron and Luka. It's pretty hard to pick against them.
Yeah, I know. This one I really struggled with too. Because I think as the season was winding down, I was so focused on let's get this out in the air. This is the first time this has ever happened where I'm actively rooting for LeBron. I don't know how to feel. It's a strange thing.
Your
strange
love for thing. Luka talk outweighs to... your hate for LeBron. It's good. Love over hate.
Somehow it does. And he's been around for so long. I've got a fucking, now I think down the line, I'm already hearing it. We've heard it before, having to defend the take that Steph Curry is actually better than LeBron. And I don't like being put in that position to have to say, actually, no. But you know, that's where we are. So, I'm kind of coming around on the guy, just in general. I like how weird the Lakers team is. So I'm like, okay, I want the Lakers to make it deep in the playoffs. I think that's going to be fun for the league. So I was dreading the matchup with the Warriors because I'm like, shit, the Warriors kind of match up well against the Lakers. And then when it happened that the Warriors lost that game and then the finalized bracket came out and it was the Timberwolves, I was like, wait, hold on. I might actually prefer the fucking Warriors. Like, the Timberwolves are a bad matchup for the Lakers in a lot of different ways. Like you said, size-wise, across the board, mainly, like the Lakers, I think, have pretty good positional size outside of that, you know, front court, that center position. But still, not having anyone even approaching Rudy Gobert's level is an issue.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like you said, no one to handle Anthony Edwards. There's very few people in the whole league who can do it, but, you know, the Lakers just don't have that sort of prototype. It is a bad matchup. This might be more so my heart talking or just rooting for the Lakers. I went with Lakers in six originally, but I'm way more leaning now that this is going to be a 7-game series. I would still pick the Lakers.
Six is the minimum.
Yeah, I agree. I would still pick the Lakers in seven, even in that case. But like you're saying, I don't feel good about it at all. This is already kind of reminding me of what the Timberwolves did to the Nuggets last year, which is just jump out and like, look, you guys think you've got it all figured out. We are a young, super, dynamic team that's just going to throw everything to the wind. Anthony Edwards is just going to attack, and then kick it out to the shooters like Naz Reid, who had a great game, like all these guys who hit threes for the Timberwolves. And so that does worry me. I would not be surprised at all if they're able to pull this out and get a series victory. But exactly like you said, on the other hand, it's like, are you really going to bet against LeBron James and Luka Doncic, who have shown time and time again that even when they lose look at last year, Luka, I'm pretty sure this was game one when Luka and the Mavs got absolutely annihilated by the Clippers. Do you remember that? That first game of that series?
Yeah.
Like, it was not 50 even 50
points in the first three quarters or something nuts.
Yeah. And it was like, oh shit. This is going to be, you know, and already people, I think a lot of people picked the Clippers in that series because they had beaten the Mavs before. And
yeah, I took
like,
them.
it was going to be close. And then it's like, no, they completely shifted. I know the Mavs are a very different team than this Lakers team, but like, also, when you go back through history, how many game ones has LeBron basically thrown because his fucking supercomputer brain is just sort of figuring out who's going to do what, giving guys confidence that he's going to sort of step on their throat and throw off their game like later in the series? Like, he's literally, LeBron is that good that he can do that and feel confident that he can make up, a game one, even if he loses it. So I'm just looking at it through that lens and it's like, I do not feel good betting against those guys. I don't care how incomplete and unbalanced the Lakers team is. They've shown that there is a good squad in there. They do have the home court advantage. They're relatively healthy. I very much see a scenario where even though Rudy Gobert, I know Chris Finch and everyone on the Timberwolves is going to sort of press that advantage of playing big. He's going to get played off the floor at some point. And I actually like the Lakers small ball lineups better, because also, you know, the other thing that's as consistent as death and taxes and all the things that Luka and LeBron bring on the positive side is that Julius Randle is going to shit the bed in the playoffs at some point. So there's all these sort of competing things going back and forth. I agree. If I had to redo it now, I'd say Lakers in seven. But you know, Lakers in six was officially what I've got. Don't feel confident about it at all. But we'll see.
First this series, is my favorite we disagree series. On.
Yeah,
there's one there we disagree on. Maybe the only one. We only got one more to talk about here. But yeah, I 100% like agree. Like with LeBron, like 19-5-3, 8-for-18 shooting, 1-for-5 from deep. Like
very
that's
quiet
horrible.
Game, very
horrible
bad
game.
Like
maybe one of his worst playoff games in like 10 years.
But that's what I think. If I'm a Timberwolves fan, I'm fucking terrified about that, because it's like, oh fuck, he's not gonna be bad like that again. You know, he's like, just it's like an algorithm. He's just seen everything, and now he's gonna come out. You know, even though he can't physically dominate like he used to, the brain is still there. And then you've got Luka. Like, it's just, this is a fascinating series. I really don't know what's gonna happen.
Yeah, it's gonna be a barn burner again. My pick before the playoffs still is, even though, you know, game one wasn't exactly the most thrilling matchup, but this is my pick, best series of the first round. Really excited to see how this one shakes out. Going with the Timberwolves here over the Lakers, and now even more of a reason for me to root for the Timberwolves, because also wanted to slide this in here. I won the $50 bet. I won it. The Sacramento Kings suck. Anthony Davis is the GOAT when it's the play-in, the bottom the half of the play-in. Brittle Bones Boy does it for me one more time. Hit like four threes or something ridiculous, and he was shooting like 30% or something this season.
Off of that though, Matt. Off of that, can we just take in the fact that we shunned the Kings for so long, and then they got good, and we couldn't shun them, and now in the blink of an eye, they're back, even seemingly in a worse position they were in before.
Yes, it might be happening.
They don't have Tyrese Halliburton or De'Aaron Fox. Like, I can't even get my mind around that. The fact that they had both of those guys and they were trying to pick. They picked wrong, and now they have neither, and they have fucking Zach LaVine. Like, it's just, it's crazy. I think I'm ready to re-shun them for many reasons, but yeah.
We'll see how this this offseason goes, but yeah, they're up there. But yes, Jordan does have the ability to get out of this, though. I don't remember if I did it last year, but regardless, my pick was so bad that it shouldn't even be triggered, the chance to earn the $50 back.
Yes.
But Jordan, if he can predict the winner, it's just the winner. Games don't matter. If he predicts the winner of each first round series of the NBA playoffs, then he will be relieved of his $50 debt. Timberwolves versus Lakers matchup so far, that's the one to watch. But moving on to the other series that, you know, we talk about the best series in the playoffs. I mean, the West is so much better, so much more interesting round than the East, and probably will be throughout the entirety of the playoff race. We got the Nuggets versus Clippers. Holy shit, this was the best game by far, bar none, of all the game ones. Clippers took that loss in overtime on the road. I thought they had it locked up, but again, this is a hell of a series. I have the Clippers in seven. That was my pick coming into the series, and I again, kind of like the Lakers and Timberwolves, no way this one goes short. It will be a seven-game series, and I really hope it is, just because that was such an awesome matchup. Jeff Van Gundy and Jokic were getting into it. That was kind of funny. I don't like the Van Gundys, but I do like that gamesmanship there from JVG. But this is just such an interesting matchup, because they match up very well against each other. I think that they're kind of similarly constructed in a weird way. Obviously, you know, you've got the star power in Kawhi and James Harden versus, you know, Jokic and Jamal Murray, and you probably give the top half of it to, you know, Jokic is the best player in the series, but the best roster is probably on the side of the Clippers. So it's kind of, you know, there's pathways for either team to win this one. But for me, really the deciding factor, and kind of has been, you know, where I've found the shortcomings for the Nuggets all season long, has been their depth. And, you know, when you look at this, Russell Westbrook had actually a pretty solid game, especially in the fourth quarter. That huge three to give them, I believe that was the 1-point lead. Maybe it was to tie. I can't remember exactly. Apologies. But yeah, 15-8-3 from Russ. And then outside of him, though, it was Peyton Watson and Pickett playing, you know, a combined 18 minutes between the two of them.
Yeah, that's Pickett a lot of minutes. 5 minutes. That's basically not like they just rely 7-man rotation already, which is crazy.
Yeah. And that's tight. And then you're going up against the Clippers, who are a very, very deep team. They've got a lot of experience, playoff proven veterans, some guys that, you know, I think are due to have like a game where they can steal it off the bench. So I think that the Clippers are going to be able to pull off the upset. I think they are going to be able to, you know, figure this out. Again, game one, they probably should have won this matchup. You know, it just comes down to some, you know, nice shooting there from Westbrook in the end. Obviously, Jokic does his usual almost, you know, 20-point triple-double here, almost a 30-point triple-double. And Jamal Murray, once again, once the playoffs start, he just decides that he's going to show everyone that he has that all-star potential, just saves it all year, almost plays 48 minutes. Like, that, I think the league might need to start investigating Jamal Murray for whatever the hell you want to call this, sandbagging, regular season sandbagging. Because, he just comes out of nowhere and he plays amazing. So, you know, playoff Murray, he doesn't like that. But for real, playoff Murray, he's a different animal, different beast. And we'll see if they can carry it. But no matter how the series goes, it's going to be awesome. Can't wait to see, you know, the finish of it. I'm going Clippers in seven. Still feel strongly about it. But again, I kind of don't want to see any of these teams get knocked out. I like watching both of them. You know, it's kind of a shame that one of them will see their season come to an end. But yeah, rolling with the Clippers in this one.
Yeah, I've got Nuggets in seven. But I mean, we're both picking seven. Like I can see it going either way. Like I could see the Clippers just clamping down. They're such a good defensive team. And the depth issue for the Nuggets, that's been the issue all year long. Even going back to last year, that was an issue. Especially when Michael Porter Jr. was just fucking benched at the end of this game and was absolutely awful. If he's unplayable or if he's deemed that like, oh, he's not really part of this rotation, then I think the Clippers do win this series. You're going to need to bring MPJ back into the fold and playing well, because you just can't afford to lose one of your top guys like that. It's a wonder that Denver won this game at all to me. It's truly crazy because of all those things. Like James Harden had a great game. Kawhi Leonard, he can play better, but he was all right. Zubac had a pretty good game. I mean, going up against Jokic, that's always going to be tough, but 21-13, I thought he did what he needed to do. And you're going to get, I think you're going to get much better games from Norman Powell. And you know, Chris Dunn's out there mainly to defend, but you know, he did his thing. He hopefully you'll get slightly better shooting games from him overall. And some more production off your bench as well. I'm looking at like Bogdanovich for the Clippers, who was brought over to be sort of a shooter and a offense maker. He was just attacked so relentlessly by the Nuggets that he didn't play that much, especially down the stretch. So I'm wondering if that can be turned around, because you're right that the Clippers are deeper, but a lot of their guys that they're bringing off their bench, I don't necessarily fully believe in. Like Ben Simmons, are we really doing this? It's crazy to me that he got 13 playoff minutes, but there he is. But like, you know, Derek Jones, again, great defender who can hit a few shots every now and then, but especially when things kind of get packed in the half court, harder to rely on him. And then Nick Batum, very hit and miss as well. So I'm looking at Bogdanovich. I think he's going to be a key to this series. If he doesn't produce anything, I think that's going to be a lot tougher for the Clippers to win. But my Nuggets, like, again, you can split hairs here, like you're saying. Like, it's Jamal Murray, what version of him are we going to get game to game? And then Kawhi Leonard, are we going to get, like, a vintage Kawhi series? I mean, there's still always the possibility that Kawhi tweaks his knee and then is out, and then that completely changes everything. But based on how he looked towards the end of the regular season, it looked like we getting a possibility of, like, the closest thing to, like, Raptors Kawhi that we've seen in quite some time. And if we get that, then that sort of changes the calculus. The only trump card I see in this series, though, is Nikola Jokic, the best player in the world, the best player in basketball. I think he's good for a few wins when you're kind of splitting hairs and things could sort of hang in the balance and go either way. I'm going with that at the end of the day. Don't feel that great about it. Don't feel confident about it, but I think the Nuggets, especially since they do have that home court, can just squeak this out at seven. But yeah, I think it's going long. It's going to be close.
Well, Jordan, let's stop cutting hairs here. It's time to give our pick to win the Western Conference and make their trip to the NBA Finals in 2025. Who do you got, man? Who do you see getting all the way?
Well, first off, Western Conference Finals, I've got OKC getting through. And then I've got the Lakers getting through, baby.
Getting through the Rockets. That's a shocker. That's a spicy take, man. That's a spicy one.
Except
spicy
that if it is the Rockets, which is their matchup, I think a lot of people would pick the Lakers over the Rockets. Yeah. So it's close. But you know, if it's the Warriors, that's juicy. I would still pick the Lakers there ultimately. Like I'm trying to be objective here, even though I like the Lakers. I do think they would have a chance if they get past the Timberwolves to beat the Rockets. I actually think they'd have more trouble beating the Timberwolves than the Rockets if that's the matchup ultimately, mm-hmm. just because of how god awful you know, the Rockets can be offensively, and just no one really can guard Luka effectively. I don't think even a Thompson twin like Jaden McDaniels, you know, if he can't do it, I don't think many other people can. So anyway, I think fandom aside, that's a strong possibility. OKC, I don't see them beating or losing to the Nuggets or the Clippers. I could see that series being close, but I just think OKC is so good that they're going to win. And then call me crazy, the Lakers are going to beat OKC. They're going to go to the finals, baby. And we're getting Adam's wet dream, Lakers Celtics yet again. That's what I see. You can call me crazy. But
we've that's David Stern's wet dream. He'll come back from the dead, actually.
Yeah, he will.
That's the NBA version of Easter there. But it's crazy that we've come so full circle that we're ready to shun the Kings, and one of us is picking the Lakers to reach the NBA finals.
It's like 2015 all over again. Or no.
20, yeah, we're ready 18? To go. 20? Yeah, something like that. But yeah, I mean, Thunder getting to the conference finals here, that's a no-brainer for me, honestly. I mean, I know that the Nuggets and the Clippers, I could see the Nuggets and the Clippers taking that to six games. I think they match up well enough. I think they're playoff savvy enough that they can give the Thunder a bit of a run for their money, but they're the best team in basketball right now. I just don't think you can really pick against them. So I've got the Thunder getting the win, getting through there. And then, like we said, I agree that the Rockets, like, I think they're better. They're equipped to beat the Warriors, but I don't think they would beat the Lakers, and definitely not the Timberwolves. So I got the Timberwolves beating the Rockets and getting them their way to the Western Conference Finals. So OKC versus
Minnesota.
So your
preseason
Minnesota.
Pick is still alive here.
I even had OKC versus Minnesota as my. I'm doing okay. My futures picks are not bad.
But have you changed them ultimately? Are you sticking with your guns, preseason guns?
Part of me does want to just do that just for the sake of it, because then it would look really good on me. But
it would.
And again, I think it would be competitive. I think it would be a really fun series. I think it would be one that we'll, you know, 10 years from now look at and be like, oh, yeah, you know, a young SGA versus Ant matchup. What a time to be alive. But I still think that the Thunder are the better team. Like, Chet Holmgren and Isaiah Hartenstein are going to run amok this entire playoffs. That is going to be something that we're going to see in every single series they play in. That tandem is just undeniable. So I think I see the Thunder getting their way to the finals, and I know that it's quite the not shock technically, but it's the highly favorited matchup. Thunder playing the Celtics in the NBA finals, and I'll give you my pick right now, man. It'll be close. It's gonna go six or seven. Like, that'll be some. If that's the finals matchup, that's gonna be beautiful great. Basketball.
Awesome. Yep.
Awesome matchup. I like that the colors are nice and clashing. You know, it's just aesthetically pleasing. Please put the fucking trophy on the court.
Oh my God.
I beg of you, please, Adam, do something right for once. But all in all, I think that we are going to see the champs dethroned, and the Oklahoma City Thunder going to win the NBA championship. I'm going Thunder in six games over the Celtics.
Love it. I would be happy with that outcome. Thrilled with that outcome. Not only do the Celtics lose, but they lose to a team led by a Canadian and then another Canadian in there, and Lou Dort, who's a big part of that squad. I would be thrilled in whatever scenario if the Thunder win the championship, just for the record. They've got a good chance to do it. Even though my cheeky Lakers pick over them, I'm sticking with that. Lakers Celtics, that's who I've got. I mean, you talk about the fucking trophy on the floor. That was one of the last times I remember it, in like 2010. Yeah. That's when it looked really good. We talk about the NBA needing to recover its ratings. You put a Lakers Celtics finals out there, I think LeBron, you're going to be looking pretty good. Yeah, LeBron and Luka. Luka back against the Celtics the next year with a different team.
Cool.
So many storylines. And I'm going Lakers in seven, baby. I'm not picking the Celtics. Are you insane? I'm not
so
picking
nuts,
these fucking
man.
Celtics.
That's nuts. Lakers, you're going with the Lakers, man. That's
Jackson Hayes is going to be the starting center on a championship-winning team. You heard it here first.
Best since Andrew Bynum, some are
that's
saying.
Who I'm going with. Yes, 100%.
Yeah, that would be an awesome one just to watch. And you said storyline wise would be so cool. And I mean, I would hope that LeBron would just pull the audible and retire on the court. If he wins a ring this year, he better retire. If that happened, I don't think that he would need any more moments or accolades. Yeah, that would be
a picture of him holding it with Bronny
on his other arm. On his other arm, yeah. Well,
it's happening.
You did it, Dad. You did it. No, you did it, son. It probably would be like last play of the game, and it's like JJ Redick's drawing up the play. He'd be like, no,
Bronny clinches it.
Put Bronny in, coach. Put Bronny. But Dad, I'm not ready, son. Believe in yourself.
It's just going to transition to a movie. Yeah. Like we're watching the game. It's going to zoom in. It'll all be the LeBron documentary. I'm telling you, I can see what they're doing.
You take me in fucking slow motion? Bronny's rising up over fucking just Jason Tatum.
Dunks on Al Horford. Ends his career.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Well, let's, maybe I bought into that finals. Let's go. If it's not going to be the Thunder, I'm cool. Yeah. We'll see Bronny James win finals MVP. But let us know what you guys have for your finals picks and predictions at Big Dog Ball Talk, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook for all you old heads out there. And don't forget X. Shout out to Elon Musk in this situation. I guess we're still giving him publicity. Should we switch to Threads? Let us know.
Honestly,
on X.
I'm thinking about it.
Blue Sky. Let us know. I've heard of that. First. Yeah, I don't know. What's the Trump one? TruthNet or something?
Truth Social. Social. Get in a fight with Donald. Yeah. It's like the Lakers are not getting far.
They're not doing it. Maybe when that'll be our thing. Very we get bad. Canceled. We'll go on there. We're the bad boys we've podcast. It was all fucking liberals.
Canceled, we've got tons of options. We'll actually become more popular probably when we get canceled. But
yes, there you go.
We'll see.
All right. Well, yes. Please cancel us. Let us know why you want us canceled at Big Go Ball Talk. Let us know. Give us a follow. Help us. Help you. And we will be back on Friday talking about game twos, game threes, all the things that you will see throughout the NBA playoffs. We're finally here, Jordan. Whew. Can't wait to see who wins the NBA championship and who wins these first round series. But before all that happens, this has been Big Dog Ball Talk. Matt Eichhorn, Jordan Flegel, and as my good friend Jordan always said.
Happy Easter to the kids. Also, rip the Pope. Hippity That's hum. Crazy. Die on Easter Sunday.
Not Easter Monday, so political, sorry. But you touched JD Vance.
That's true. Please let us on Truth Social, JD, please.
Yes. It's a satire. It's a joke.